All right. Good afternoon. I'd like to call this Saturday, January 25th, 2020 meeting of the Oceano Community Services District to order. And may we have a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Director Aplogle?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Austin?
Here. May you all please join me in the flag salute? Thank you. So now we will open for public comment. This is for items that are not on the agenda. So if you're here for the fire presentation on Major A20, that will come after the presentation. So if anyone wants to speak on any item that is not on the agenda, please come forward. Okay, seeing none. And we have no closed session, correct? Okay. I'm going to introduce our business item. This is an informational presentation regarding Measure A20 on the ballot for the March 3rd, 2020 consolidated election for voters within the Oceano Community Services District boundaries regarding a special tax for emergency medical and fire protection services. So with that, I believe the board here will go into the audience, correct?
So, yes, President Austin, if you want to, since this is more an informational meeting with presentations for the public, we kind of directed the overhead correct. Towards them. You're more than happy, you know, you can stay where you are, or if you'd like to get a better view, you can come over here into the audience if you desire. But we have basically two presentations, one from the fire chief, and then he's also going to have some demonstrations for the public, and then I will have a presentation. So he's going to take kind of the history of fire in Oceano and the operation side of things, and then I'll get into the specifics of the special tax. And then we'll open it for questions and answers to the public so they can come to the lectern and ask questions. And then if your board wants to return to the dais and you can ask questions as well, then you'll open it up to formal public comment on the item, and then you can receive and file it at the end. So that's kind of the process. So I'm going to introduce the fire chief, Mr. Lieberman, and he has a presentation for the public on the fire department and an overview. So if you'd like to sit in the audience, feel free, or if you want to stay where you are, that's fine too.
I don't think there's much room out there for us. Maybe we ought to just...
I'm fine just sitting here.
Okay.
I'll follow the... We have it here. I can follow it this way.
Maybe you can move more this way.
Yeah.
Karen, would you like to come over this way?
I'm just going to look at my...
She's looking at her computer. Yeah, I'll move some.
Good afternoon, folks. I'm Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief of the Five Cities Fire Authority. Board, no disrespect intended or staff. If you're seeing the back of me, I'll try to be somewhat sideways. Folks, I just want to give you a little bit of information about the Five Cities Fire Authority, Mr. Schmidt. And I know I have a question slide at the end, but in talking to Will, we're going to ask that you hold your questions until both presentations have been completed. I do have Captain Tom Huey with our firefighters, who's going to demonstrate some skills that I'll allude to towards the end of the presentation here. But basically, I just want to talk to you about how the Five Cities Fire Authority came to be, what the mission of a modern fire department is. A lot of us have ideas of what a fire department is or what it should do. Show you some trends and data, talk about wrapping it all up. What does it all mean? Again, we're going to try to defer questions until after Mr. Clemens, and then I'm going to introduce Mr. Huey and some of our folks to demonstrate an example of a skill for you. So how did we get here? Well, we all started as volunteers. I was a proud volunteer of the Grover City Fire Department that became the Grover Beach Fire Department. We were all volunteers until the early 2000s. So we've just started 2020, so not that long ago, we were all volunteer fire departments, serving our communities to the best of our abilities, and over time, things became a challenge. We had to support our families by working where work was available, and the days of us working in town and running to the fire engine, unfortunately, were becoming harder and harder to accomplish. That, along with fire training requirements from the state fire marshal's office, which is actually a really good thing, to elevate our training requirements to make us better at what we do, just again really challenged the volunteer organization. So again, in around the 2000s, each of the three communities began hiring full-time folks. So I hope this isn't an eye test, this information. I'll just try to talk to it so you don't have to try to read it. But it all started about... What? 2004, with Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach entering into a joint fire administration agreement. So it just began to take shape in 2004 with Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach deciding, why are we each paying for our own fire chief and our own administrative staff? It seems to us to make more sense that we streamline and become more efficient by start sharing that administrative cost. So fire chief, admin support in the office, and a training captain from Grover Beach, we began sharing between the two cities. And in 07, the cities decided, hey, maybe we should stop the fire engine where we would stop at the city limit sign. So if there was a medical emergency just across Oak Park Boulevard in Arroyo Grande and I was on the Grover Beach engine, maybe I shouldn't stop at the intersection and wait for Arroyo Grande to get there. I think folks, when they dialed 911, we were starting to realize they don't care what color a fire engine is or what it says on the door. They just want rapid professional care. So what's called a boundary drop, that began in 2007, and the cities began to share the reserve or part-time firefighter program. That was the last vestige of our volunteers moved into part-time reserve firefighter capacities. That training captain became a battalion chief, and we kept moving forward. In 2008, Oceano said, hey, we want a seat at the table, and they joined to share that fire chief duty coverage as well as the reserve firefighter programs. If I'm talking too fast, raise your hand. In 2009, the OCSD board, as well as the two city councils, decided we should enter into a formal consolidation. And in 2010, the Five Cities Fire Authority was created. It was created, next slide, by the three member communities contributing their employees that they had on payroll at the time, their existing equipment, all came into one. So regardless of the age of the equipment or the number of employees, they all came into the Five Cities Fire Authority in 2010. In 2014, just before I started, there was an attempt to raise some revenues through the three communities with a benefit assessment. And prior to that ballot measure, the Fire Authority, with community support, had applied for a FEMA grant and was able to hire six full-time employees to help deal with current needs and plan for the future. But again, those were tied to a short-term agreement. And after the ballot measure failure, unfortunately, there was not a funding source to keep those employees, and they were laid off. So that was in 2014. I joined the organization in December of 2014, and I'll go into some more examples of what happened once I got here, because I can speak to what I did do or didn't do once I got here. In 2015, the communities began an investment, a needed investment to replace some obsolete fire engines that were unfortunately literally breaking down, driving with lights and sirens to an emergency call. That's not what our community expects, and the communities understood that, and they made the needed investment in new fire engines, two of them, breathing apparatus. So you see the air bottles and the masks the firefighters wear. There's some really strict OSHA requirements behind that equipment, and it's expensive, as you can imagine. And the agency had tried twice for FEMA grants to get funding to replace that equipment, and twice we were unsuccessful. So the communities had to step up and spend about $350,000 to replace the self-contained breathing apparatus system for our agency as well. We began the transition. I told you about those part-time folks that were the last of our community volunteers and still dedicated to the job. As you know, the cost of living on the Central Coast is a challenge. And when these days, when a top-end reserve firefighter is making $17 an hour to do the work of a full-time employee, they're taking on a second, maybe even a third job. And the ones that are looking for a career in the fire service, and you'll see this with my trends that I'll share with you, I'm one of those aging baby boomers that's getting close to retirement. And when, as the baby boomers continue to retire, it creates opportunity in these large fire departments throughout the state. And if a firefighter really wants a career in this business, they're going to go where the work is. And so we've lost a number of people, a significant number of people, to larger agencies because they had opportunity. In 2017, the board adopted a five-year strategic plan that myself, staff, community members, and board members all worked on, and that laid some groundwork for some short-term prioritization. So just talking about the mission of a modern fire department, I'm looking around the room, and I'm hopeful that some people may remember the commercial of the Maytag repairman sitting around waiting for someone's appliance to break, and it never broke. Thank you for laughing, because I can't really use that example very often anymore. I appreciate that. I think that's what people kind of thought the fire department was, that the firefighters sat around the station playing checkers and waiting for a fire to happen. And unfortunately, or fortunately, over time and with the capacity that the fire service had, we really became that municipal, I'm so sorry, I'm not looking at you, that municipal catch-all for things that a community expected and needed. So if you go down this list, fire suppression, we're still called the fire department, but over 60% of the time we were responding to medical emergencies, vehicle accidents, along with extrication. So thankfully, over time, I'm amazed at how much safer our vehicles are with seatbelts, number one, and airbags and design, and that just from the time I was a volunteer till today, when I see people walking away from car accidents that they normally would not have walked away with, I'm so grateful. But our folks still need the training to understand how to deal with airbag systems, how to deal with hybrid vehicles, how to deal with electric vehicles that are either on fire or they have to start dismantling. It's very technical. Hazardous materials, you may remember the news. It was a week or so ago that there's a tanker across the levee that rolled over. We need to be able to deal with that professionally and with quality skills so we can protect you and protect ourselves. We have a member of our department who's on the countywide hazardous materials team. Again, we're a big county, but we're small. So none of us can field a complete hazardous materials team, and so the county has a collective agreement. Actually, it's a joint powers agreement, just like the Five Cities Fire Authority, for a hazmat team, where we all put employees on the team, and we all collectively pay an annual fee to fund that team, and they are used. And when they're needed, we expect them to have the technical knowledge to mitigate an incident. Technical rescue, it's a fancy word, but whether it's cutting someone out of a car, a confined space rescue at a place like the sanitation district, or as simple as we're getting called out to a ranch from time to time because someone's horse is down a slope and they can't get up, and the technical rescue team has the expertise and the equipment to get that horse back on its feet. Climbing Morro Rock, all of those things requires additional training, and we have two folks in our department that are part of that team. Public service and good intent. Just want to spend a second on that because you're probably wondering what in the world that might be. So again, I talked to you about how we're kind of the catch-all for the community when they need assistance. And what started as the firefighters always wanting to help and do anything has evolved into this category where you'll hear us going to a request for a lift assist, or a smoke detector is beeping and someone can't reach it, or they're alone. All kinds of things, smell of gas, smell of smoke, all of these things were here to help the community. And a lot of folks will say, why am I paying you to go do a lift assist for someone? Why don't they have somebody else do that? Well, if you look at the age of our county and you realize how popular it is for folks to retire here, their families might not be able to follow them. And as we get older, unfortunately, we sometimes develop health issues. And as we get older, the two of us in the house might not be able to help the other one out of the car after a doctor's appointment or a discharge from the hospital. And who else is going to help you? Or I might be on blood thinners and be taking a great nap in my lounger, and then I wake up and I stand up too fast and I get lightheaded and I fall down and bang my head on the floor, and folks call the fire department saying, please help my spouse back into their chair. Well, our folks have to do a medical assessment, because what if that head bonk became a subdural bleed? So we have to assess those good intent calls, those lift assist calls, because often they become medical emergencies. Fire prevention, we always think about fire prevention as open house and kids with plastic firefighter helmets and all of that fun stuff, but it's a lot more than that. And this is an area where we have growing pains in taking care of the communities in terms of enforcing fire code, making sure that new construction is built safely, that there's fire sprinklers and adequate firewalls, doing inspections in our restaurants. Fire prevention is very encompassing, and we're doing our best to take care of that. Public education, I just talked to you about, visiting kids at school, having open house, but it's also now with this dreaded PG&E event called a public safety power shutoff, it's really working with community preparedness and trying to educate folks that they really need to plan for something like that. Just some photos to share with you what I was talking about. And the one thing that nobody thinks about is what happens when I drive my car into a house, and who's going to, or worse yet, I'm the driver and the person whose house it is saying, what in the world is going to happen now? So the fire department, again, that's our job. We're there. There's some braces and struts at the bottom of that truck, but we're there to help get that vehicle out of the house, work with the building officials to make check the integrity of the home. Sometimes the folks have to leave. They can't stay there. And our folks will bring shoring materials. We'll drag a trailer over there with lumber and tools, and the folks will make sure that the home is stable before they leave to make sure that there's not further structural damage or a collapse of that house. So we're carpenters as well. The photo on the right's a little tough to see. I told Engineer Hinden I was going to use a picture of him today with Firefighter Lee, but unfortunately with the world that we live in, it's become a more violent place. And the fire department, as much as we wanted to avoid it, we have to be prepared for those quick acts of violence. And so now we're part of a rescue task force. If there's a shooting incident, our folks are now donning ballistic protection and going in to help save those patients that might have injuries where they're bleeding rapidly. We want to try to save them with law enforcement support and pull them to a safer area. Okay, that was a mouthful. So trends. I don't have any hair, but if I did, it would be silver. So the silver tsunami boomer generation retirements I talked to you about, that's a trend that we all have to acknowledge. Calls for service are increasing at over 3% annually. We're responding to multiple simultaneous 911 calls now, and you'll see a chart. I believe it's 28% of our call volume. Are there more than one 911 call going on when we have three stations to take care of everyone? Multi-company calls. That might be a traffic collision, for example, where we need rescue equipment and we need more bodies to take care of it. So there's maybe two fire engines or the truck and an engine or whatever that combination is attached to that call, which means we've got two resources committed to one call and we may have a capacity issue for that next 911 call. Response staffing truly has not increased since 2010 when we formed. Yes, we've been able to shore up some of the hemorrhaging with the reserve program by transitioning to full-time firefighters, but our net staffing numbers have not increased since the formation of the fire authority. Capital replacement funding. A fire engine, please take a deep breath before I tell you how much a fire engine costs. I'm really grateful that we were able to get ours for the prices that we did a couple of years ago. We have a brand new fire engine, a couple years old in this station. Today, that engine's over $700,000. Thankfully, they last for 15 years, but it's $700,000 with that replacement cost spread over 15 years. When the agency was funded, there was no replacement funding source that was ever identified. So the plan. So we did the plan based on what we know today and what we can forecast into the future based on those trends that I shared with you. presented the plan. The board adopted the plan. It's very comprehensive. And then the board sat down in a board meeting and a work session and said, let's prioritize a piece of that plan. And that's where we are today. So the spreadsheet, again, it's not an eye test, but this is the basic initial board prioritization from 2018. And the big focus was, let's have a plan to phase in those full-time firefighter positions. Let's get to that 3rd Battalion Chief position that we need. But it was really shoring up the staffing at the stations was the initial prioritization. And I'm grateful that you don't have to look at the left part of the eye test. We've accomplished it. So we've hired full-time firefighters at 2 out of our 3 stations. This station is the next on the list. And so we're making good progress with the support of the communities. Will can talk to you about the numbers behind it, but we're at that pivotal place where your community is considering a question right now to be answered in March. Trends and data, this is a little tough to see. There is a laser here. I'm so scared to use it. So if you look at the pretty colored boxes, those are call types. So this says EMS, Emergency Medical Services. You can see that it's about 62% of our total calls. Fires. People say there's no fires. Well, thank goodness there's not a lot of them, but there's 71. This is calendar year 2019. About 2% of our calls. Interestingly, if you look at the 3 communities, Oceano had the most of those fire incidents in 2019. Hazardous conditions, public service we talked about, false alarms, other, those are some really rare call types that we don't break out because they're very infrequent. There's only 8. You can see a total of 3,400 calls for service here, combining all of these categories. This is called a heat map. You're probably going, great, but what in the world is it? The heat map takes those 3,400 calls and it places them into frequency in a visual diagram. So just to give you some points for reference, I think you can see Highway 101 there running through the middle. This linear spot right here, this is Grand Avenue. Okay? This down here is Cienega. So when you look at the orange, that's higher frequency. So you can start thinking about landmarks. We do this all day long in the fire department because we kind of know based on our calls. So this is Cienega. So this would be a lot of the mobile home parks. This is Elm Street near Farrell. So we've got Arroyo Grande Care Center. We've got several senior apartment buildings and some senior residences in that area. This, you're probably saying, what is this? This is Sunrise Terrace Mobile Home Park. This is Grand Avenue. This little blurb right here is the village of Arroyo Grande. This could either be accidents along the freeway or along Branch. There's a fair amount of activity at Branch and Oak Park Boulevard in terms of traffic collisions. Down here would be Oceano Airport Lagoon area, Pier Avenue. That's what that is right there. So I talked to you about simultaneous calls. So multiple 911 calls for different requests, different addresses, not the same address. That's like a theme song for this slide. So this is 2017 data, but in 2017, 28%, so nearly 30% of our total calls were happening simultaneously. So that's at least 2 of our 3 stations are committed to 911 calls. 2017 data. This is the multi-incident occurrence. So remember, more than one station, more than one fire rig is responding to a call at the same time. It was about 8% of our total call volume in 2017. So again, what do these slides mean? This just means that as we're getting busier, it's impacting the capacity of our available resources. Hopefully this is, it looks like an R chart. Maybe you printed a copy of this out off the agenda, or you can visit me afterwards. But as part of the strategic plan, we started looking at per capita cost by community, focusing mainly on the municipalities in the county. We took the total expenditures of the fire department. We looked at their population, and we got a per capita cost. So you can kind of see across. I will give you a disclaimer that Atascadero, Morro Bay, Paso Robles, and San Luis Obispo do have paramedics in their fire department, so there is a difference, a little higher cost to have a paramedic program. We do not have one. We're EMTs or basic life support, just like Pismo Beach is. But you can see, and I hate showing this slide because it makes it look like we're a really great deal and we're good. And I believe that we're a really great value. I believe that our population number, because the CSD isn't updated by the state franchise tax board like cities are every year, I believe our population number is actually low. We'll get a better idea after this next census. But I believe that if our population number is higher, you're going to see that per capita cost drop a little bit more. So when you talk about how expensive the fire service is, I'm going to tell you it's expensive. A service-based business, whether you're a business person or a government person, is not inexpensive because of the community expectation. But when you look and compare us to other communities, we're doing pretty well with your tax dollars, and we're very cognizant of it. I've been in Grover Beach since I moved here, and I'm paying my fair share of that bill as well as street bond measures and everything else. So I just want to show you where we stack up with the other communities. So what does it all mean? You probably already figured this out. We're relatively young. We're a 10-year-old. You're welcome. We behave as best we can, but we continue to mature as we work together more, we work with the communities more, and we address these different types of calls. But just like a business that I alluded to a minute ago, investment will continue to be needed to keep up with community demand and expectations. So when people dial 911, the first thing we hear is, what took you so long? Because when you really need someone, you're dialing 911 because you can no longer help yourself and you're relying on someone else to get there. The first thing we hear is, what took you so long? And a lot of stuff goes on, especially if you're using a cellular phone. How's that phone call getting routed? And then how long is the dispatcher taking to dispatch us? We're grateful that in November of 2018, we moved our dispatch center to the county command center where Cal Fire is dispatched, so it's a dedicated fire dispatch center. There's always a fire captain in that room to kind of triage the calls. Sometimes we don't go to calls anymore that a police department didn't know what to do with us and they'd send us to, so it's much more efficient about our unit utilization. But again, we're a service-based commodity. So I'm not going to let you ask any questions yet. Per Will, sorry, Will. Do you want to, Tom, do we have people here? We'll just move forward. So a lot of times, one of those frequently asked questions is, 68% of the time you're going to these medical calls, why does fire need to go when we have an ambulance? Why doesn't just the ambulance go to these medical calls? And it's a reasonable question, and I can give you a reasonable answer, but I'm going to introduce you to Captain Tom Huey with our department, who's a paramedic, who's going to talk to you about EMS calls and specifically about cardiac arrest, because not to steal your thunder, people say, what's your response time? And response times, you know, we can have standards, we can have goals, but you realize that the response times are really based on that American Heart Association 4 to 6 minutes during cardiac arrest, because remember, about that seventh minute, there's irreversible brain damage. So that is really the backbone for response time standards. Sorry to steal that from you. Maybe your presentation will be shorter. But I'd like to turn this over to Captain Huey.
Thanks, Chief. My name is Tom Huey. I'm a fire captain with the Five Cities Fire, as well as being a fire captain and working here for nearly 20. Oh,
thank you.
Sorry about that. Can you hear that? Okay. So, Tom Huey, work for Five Cities Fire Authority. I've been here locally for, worked for this fire department for nearly 22 years now. I started here with Oceano and with Grover Beach and seen a lot of growth and changes here. It's been great run. As well as being a firefighter in this community, I've also worked as a paramedic here. I've worked for a private ambulance service here in San Luis Obispo County, as well as in Kern County, in a pretty busy municipal system. So with that being said, Chief Lieberman was talking about how the majority of our calls are medical related, and they are. 63% is our medical call volume within the Five Cities Fire Authority. That is requires a tremendous amount of training as well as certifications that aren't something that Five Cities Fire Authority makes up. It's actually from a state level and then a county level, and we follow protocols. Just a quick question here. How many folks here have ever been trained in CPR? Raise your hand. Okay. And with being trained in CPR, that's great, by the way, because you guys are part of the chain of survival when it comes to CPR. How many folks here, with the raise of your hand, has been trained in CPR over the last 3 years? Okay, so half. So as you guys know, for those that have gone through the new training standards, that's American Heart Association standards, that's also adopted by the state, and which is a protocol by the County of San Luis Obispo that we are to follow, we know that that a lot of changes have happened, and one of those changes that's happened is really trying to get our public involved in witnessing. If they witness a cardiac arrest, is getting involved quickly. And because what the studies have shown is that early CPR and early defibrillation using a monitor, and we're going to have a little bit of a demonstration on that here in a bit, all those keys are keys of survival. And if those things are all put into place, studies have found that there's a potential for 60% return, which that means return to respirations, return to pulses, and a palpable blood pressure. Everybody familiar with the palpable blood pressure. Now, there is difference in how that outcome changes due to patient history and stuff like that, but we're able to get them to a certain time that we can bring them back, try to stabilize them, and get them to the most appropriate facility. And those appropriate facilities, and my wife, thank God, is not here, but my wife is a nurse at Arroyo Grande Hospital, but our cardiac arrest patients, our cardiac patients that meet criteria, do not go to Arroyo Grande Hospital. Are you guys aware of that? Those actually go to, depending on where we're at, they'll go to Marion Hospital, to the cardiac cath lab, or to French Hospital, which is also another cardiac cath lab. That's part of that chain of survival. So, getting kind of back to the changes in American Heart Association and CPR standards, is that another question? Keep you guys engaged a little bit. Anybody NASCAR fans? Okay. Anybody ever watched NASCAR before? You know, the races? Okay. You know when they're starting to run out of gas and run out of tires and they go into the pit, right? Have everybody seen that? And all those guys jump over the barrier, and each one of those people have a job to do, right? So there's four guys changing a tire. There's one guy washing the window. There's one guy filling the gas tank, and there's one guy giving the driver, you know, a drink of water or something. We do the same type of thing now with the changing in the American Heart Association standards and our county protocol standards, and we call it pit crew CPR. And that's part of that chain of survivability. So we'll arrive at scene, or the ambulance will arrive at scene first, depending on the location, and we'll identify that if the patient is not breathing, has no pulse, hopefully it's been witnessed by either a bystander or family member, and they'll start CPR. Now that we are with Cal Fire in our dispatch, which is great, we have a great working relationship with our brothers and sisters at Cal Fire, that they can help prompt with starting CPR over the telephone, which is something that we weren't able to do before, and they'll get that chain of survival going right off the bat. Hopefully those that have been trained in CPR, well, you guys will know what to do, correct? So if not, then hopefully the dispatcher can help with getting that information across. With that being said, we'll come on scene, and we will start chest compressions. We'll start asking patient, family, or bystanders, what was the patient doing? What were the signs and symptoms beforehand? Does the patient have any history of these cardiac type of events? So we kind of get a baseline of patient history. That's very important also for chain of survival. So with that being said, I think it's going to be easier just to kind of do a demonstration. Now, we had San Luis Ambulance was going to be here. They're part of our they're one of our cooperating agencies. They're actually our ambulance service, the paramedic service that does the transport and patient care after BLS. They are busy on calls, which is kind of normal for us around here. So they're not here right now. So what I'm going to do is kind of substitute them with one of our other crews, and they're going to kind of take over as the paramedics as they would. And so we're going to try and just do a demonstration. I was told that we need to do it kind of in this area. So I might have to – is it right over here? Okay. So if everyone can kind of see, I don't – you know, hopefully if you guys want to see, if you might need to stand up and kind of rearrange. I'm going to get this set up real fast for you guys so we can kind of go through it, and I'm going to explain some things as we're going down. Okay? All right, so just bear with me a minute. So this is our patient for the day, okay? And the reason why we have this instead of a real person is because we're actually going to be doing chest compressions, and that's not very viable on us. That's for training purposes. So I'm going to be kind of like the patient's friend, okay? The witnessed my friend go down, and I'm not really trained in CPR, which is literally half of the time. So so bear with me here a second. Okay, so what we're going to do here is that this is my buddy Bob, and we were at the golf course over here and golfing a couple of rounds. And Bob has some history of strokes as well as a cardiac event, but he doesn't have very much deficits. We're just out there having a good time and enjoying this nice day out here, 60 degrees out, 65 degrees out, nice wind, good day for golf. And so Bob was starting to having some chest pain as we were walking the course, and he became really diaphoretic, really sweaty, was starting to have some shortness of breath. I told Bob, hey, why don't we sit down, buddy? And he collapsed. And only thing I have is my cell phone. I can see people kind of far back, and I'm trying to wave at them, but what I'm going to do is just call 911. So now I've called 911 and said, my buddy Bob, he's down. He's on the sixth hole of the golf course in Grover, and I need help, and I don't know what to do. So, and I don't really feel comfortable because I don't feel comfortable with this whole situation with doing CPR. I've never been trained on how to do that. So I'm going to go and try to help Bob as much as I can and try to push on his chest a little bit and see if we can get him going. Now that this call volume's going, where are we at? We're at about a minute now. So the ambulance has been dispatched. Fire department's been dispatched. They're coming from their fire station. They're coming from this station right here. It's a quick jaunt right down Highway 1. It's traffic. It's a Saturday afternoon just like now, and you got multiple vehicles all over the road. And so the fire department has to kind of get through that. And Bob still isn't breathing. And so I'm getting kind of nervous. I'm still trying to do CPR as much as I can. Waiting for the fire department still to show up. Now it's been about a minute and a half or so since Bob went down and stopped breathing. Dispatch is telling me how to do it, and I'm doing it as best as I possibly can. But I'm just going to continue trying to help do CPR on Bob here. The one thing that I'm trying to wave people down to as they're walking around, because I know that there's a potential AED somewhere in that clubhouse, but no one's kind of seeing my attention here. So I can hear the fire department now coming. They're coming up the road, and now they got to get on the golf course and make their way down, hopefully with a golf cart, and hopefully they're going to get here soon. So actually, my crew is just showing up, so I was kind of killing some time there. So this is my engine company out of here at Station 3, to be a fact. Hey, fellas, this is my buddy Bob. He's 70 years old. We were playing golf, and he just started to say he was having some chest pain and was getting really sweaty and said he was having some difficulty breathing. I was trying to do CPR when you guys got here. It's been about 3 or 4 minutes maybe. I'm not really sure. Now, that's important to know how long this has been going on, because like the chief alluded, what's our time frame for brain death? Yeah, four to 6 minutes, right? And our new standards with CPR is that, you know, we're not giving, if I need to, we're not giving mouth-to-mouth anymore with just bystanders. It's just chest compression. Bob has a, I know that he's had some cardiac problems before in the past, and I know that he's he has some chest, I think some cardiac issues, and, what was that other thing? Strokes. No, I've never known Bob to have a heart attack like this before. Bob and I have known each other for a few years now. We're in the Elks together. What are you guys doing there? Are you helping Bob? Okay. So what they're doing here is that part of that chain of survival is chest compressions, fast, appropriate chest compressions that's getting full recoil. And what that's doing is helping circulate the blood through the vital organs, especially the brain, is which is the most important thing to try to keep that blood flow and oxygen. What they also added that I didn't have was an AED, and that AED is to try to restart or correct a rhythm, a heart rhythm that is not perfusing, okay? It's not perfusing oxygen or blood through the heart. So we're hopefully trying to restart the heart. So what they're doing is counting. We're doing chest compressions at 100 a minute, okay? We've also started oxygen therapy. And once we kind of get this going, and we're kind of setting this up because the ambulance is showing up. Is the ambulance out there yet? Okay. My ambulance crew, San Luis Ambulance Medic 6-1, is showing up right now. And sorry they're not here, but they would normally have all of their advanced life support gear, which includes their monitor, their medications, IVs, advanced airway, as well as the gurney to transport the patient to the ambulance for quick access to the ambulance. So what the paramedic at this time would be doing is asking questions to our fire personnel, like, how long have you been doing CPR? How many shocks have you given? How many rounds? How many minutes have we been doing this? And so we can say that we've gone through 2 rounds, 3 rounds of CPR. We shocked him once, okay? They're going to ask also, what type of history does Bob here have? You know, how old is he? Because what they're doing is building that call up so they can get that information to the hospital, because we're going to need to make a consultation with the hospital via radio, and then give a patient care transfer over once we arrive to the hospital. And like I said, if this patient has a return, we're also going to be going with the ambulance to those hospitals. So if that's going to be at Marion Hospital or that's going to go to French Hospital, we're going to, especially if they've had a return. It happens quite a bit where they go back into cardiac arrest, so they need that extra hand to help with CPR. So our time frame usually for CPR calls are going to be about 20 minutes is kind of where our time frames are going to be at. So that's after that the paramedics has been able to get an advanced line and given medications. If there's been no return and the patient is in what's called a flat line, everybody see that on a show? You know, like emergency, ER, all that stuff. If they're in a rhythm that's not changed over 20 minutes, then we will be making contact with our base hospital, which would be French or Marion Hospital, and we would be looking at termination orders because there's no need to work this patient any further. And then after that, we would be needing to wait for notifications for police to come out, sheriff, coroner, and then hopefully notification of family, especially being Bob and we're out golfing. That's also another thing that's not being represented here because of, as for me, being on a three-person company, is that I would be also making phone calls, hopefully, to Bob's family and trying to get medications and all that kind of stuff so we know what type of further care that we can provide to him. So I'm going to fast forward this up on these guys. It's now been about 15 minutes, and after they've checked, they have found that that Bob is actually starting to what we call biting on the tube. He's actually biting down and grimacing. which means that we probably have perfusion. At that time, we would be checking for pulses. We'd be checking for blood pressure, and it's time to go. It's time to get moving, because more than likely, Bob has a blockage in an artery that needs to be taken care of pretty quickly. So this time, we would be putting the patient on a backboard, a stable work on a gurney that's kind of soft. So in case if he goes back into cardiac arrest, we have a solid support. We would be lifting Bob up on the gurney, putting all of the advanced cardiac stuff probably on his lap as we're wheeling him to the ambulance. And at that time, engine 3 would essentially be going out of service, since it's a two-person station here, would be going out of service, and one of the firefighters that's assigned would be going to the hospital to help with patient care. Okay. And there he goes. Hopefully Bob has a safe return, and we'll see how that goes. And
you continue your game.
What's that?
And you continue your game.
Well, I still have like three holes left. No, that was terrible. So hopefully Bob and I could finish up our golf game. So I'm going to turn this back over to Chief Lieberman, correct?
Tom, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. I just hope that visual helked explain a lot of the things we talk about. At this time, I'd like to hand the clicker and the presentation to Mr. Clements.
So my presentation isn't nearly as exciting. My name's Will Clemens. I'm your general manager. I've been here just under 2 months, so this is my first really meeting the community. So hello. So what I'm going to talk about, the chief was talking about some of the issues with fire service and operational issues, and what I'm going to talk about is specifically Measure A20. So first off, what is Measure A20 and why is it needed? What are the ramifications if it either passes or fails? And basically try to bring it down to what does the decision that you as a community are going to make boil down to. So first, what is a special tax? So California's right to vote on taxes. Various propositions have established that the decision on whether to approve any additional taxes, and in this case to fund fire and emergency services, must be made by voters. So voters are going to decide whether to fund additional taxes that are going to be imposed on parcels of property within Oceano. And it requires a two-thirds voter approval if, as this measure was, it was proposed by a local agency, your CSD. So that's a pretty high bar, two-thirds voter approval. So this is the measure as it's going to appear on your ballots. And so the first part is really describing what it's needed for, to maintain rapid response times for 911 medical emergency and fire protection services, to provide 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week staffed medical emergency and fire vehicles. Shall the district ordinance number 2021 levying an annual special tax of $180 per parcel. So let's take that. So each parcel would be levied $180 annually, or that equates to $15 a month. So how does that work? Well, so if your parcel has an apartment building on it, that just means the parcel is getting charged one $180 charge. Now, whether the landlord chooses to pass that on to his tenants is a decision up to the property owner. If he was, then you would simply, you know, kind of assume he's going to raise the rent. If he has 10 units, he's going to raise it $18 a year. That's what that would be. If it's a mobile home park, so most mobile home parks have very few parcels, one parcel, two parcels maybe. There's going to be a $180 charge on each of those parcels. And again, if the landlord chooses to pass that on to the mobile homeowners, it would be divided by however many mobile homes are on that parcel. So that's what the charge is, $180 per parcel. In general, that it's going to estimate to bring in $422,000 a year. So right now, our share of Five City Fire Authority costs is projected to go up to about $1.4 million annually. Currently, we get about $1 million in property tax to fund fire services. So that's why the $400,000 approximately is needed to fill that gap. It's subject to a maximum increase of 2% a year. Can't go above that. It can be repealed by voters. And it also requires an independent citizen oversight committee be formed to make sure that every dollar of that goes to emergency fire and medical services. That's all the information that's contained there in your ballot measure. So, why a special tax? Well, if you look at the other CSDs that provide fire service, Oceano is the only CSD that doesn't have a supplemental source of funding like a special tax that has full-time firefighters. And unlike cities, so you look at our partner agencies, Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, they have a wide variety of revenue sources. They have TOT, transient occupancy taxes. They have sales tax. Grover has a cannabis tax. So there's a wide variety of revenue sources to fund their share of the costs. And Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach have identified those revenue sources to pay their share. And now Oceano gets to choose whether it can fund its share of the Five City Fire Authority costs. And the only revenue stream we have as a district to pay for fire and medical services is property tax. And as I mentioned, we get about $1 million a year. So it's not enough to fund our share of the costs. So, what happens if Measure A20 is approved or if it's not? So, in order for Oceano to continue to participate in the Five City Fire Authority, voters must approve Measure A20 on the March ballot. If Measure A20 does not pass, the CSD will cease to be a member of the FCFA on June 30th, 2021. So that's just over a year from March, a year and a few months. So that begins the wind-down period. And then it's at that point in time that the board will need to decide how to provide fire services or whether to provide them at all to the community. Yes, that's an eye test. But so basically what this is showing is what options exist if Measure A20 is approved. So it would allow us to remain a member of Five Cities Fire Authority. And Five Cities Fire Authority, as Chief Lieberman showed, has the lowest per capita cost in the county as far as municipal fire organizations go. So we can really see the benefit of Oceano belonging to this kind of shared service model that's been developed over the last 10 years. However, it also puts Oceano in a position that should Five City Fire Authority not be a good option in the future, it gives Oceano a greater ability to re-stand up its own fire department if Measure A20 passes. So those are a couple of options that exist going into the future if Measure A20 passes. What are the options if Measure A20 doesn't pass? There's basically trying to stand up another fire department ourselves, as was discussed with, the trend in volunteer fire departments, reserve firefighters, that's going to be a challenge to stand up another independent fire department. So another scenario would be that the district decides to divest of fire service powers, fire and emergency service powers. And that's a process that goes through LAFCO. And the natural agency to take over would be the county. So the county would be responsible for making future decisions on fire and emergency services in Oceano if we divested through LAFCO, which is a statutory-driven process. So what could that look like if the county were to take over? And really, the county recently did a study for all the special districts in the county that provide fire service. And because this is an issue that's facing all of them. The costs are rising with full-time firefighters. And so the county commissioned this study to be done on what it would look like if the county were to take over the fire service in all of these fire districts. And they kind of got an eyeful, and they realized how expensive that would be, and there's no way they could fund those services. So they developed a policy and basically said that we're not going to subsidize any fire districts within the county unless we control them. So that was part of their policy. And they wanted to minimize any impact on the county general fund. So they would look to those districts for any and all revenue streams or assets to help fund that service. So they also provided a cost estimate for each one of those fire services. And so for Oceano, they developed a cost estimate for CAL FIRE to staff this station with two people. And their, two-man crew, their estimate was $1.558 million annually. So you can kind of see the difference. Five Cities Fire Authority, we can do it for $1.4 million. The county would require, almost $1.6. So then how is the county going to fund that amount? They're not just going to take their general fund and pay it $1.5 million. But they did provide us with, I had a meeting with Wade Horton, and it helps that I worked for the county for 20 years, so I know Wade well. And so he reiterated the fact that all potential options for the transfer of assets, facilities, property taxes, and other funding mechanisms from the district to the county to fund the proposed level of service would be needed. And again, minimizing any impact to the county general fund. So then what does that mean for Oceano? How are they going to fund $1.558 million? So obviously they would take the fire station. That makes sense. If they're going to operate a fire service out of here, they would take the fire station. They would take the property tax that we currently use to fund that, which is just over $1 million. But then we also receive property tax that we use to pay for street lighting. About $50,000 a year is budgeted for street lighting. So would the county take that? Very possible. So that would mean street lighting would be turned off. Garbage franchise. We get about $95,000 a year in garbage franchise fees. The county could take the garbage franchise from the district, and they have a history of doing that. When they needed to step in to Los Osos to help Los Osos solve a financial problem, they took the garbage franchise away from Los Osos to help fund that solution. So it's very realistic that they could take the garbage franchise. So any of the garbage programs that we see we've been able to provide over the years probably would not be that way under the county. And then we have the sheriff substation next door, which we lease to the county, and they provide us about $114,000 a year in revenue. So the county could say, we want the sheriff substation also. That way they don't have to spend $114,000, but they can direct that to the fire service. But even with all of those assets, that would only bring them to $1.288 million. So they're going to still be $270,000 short. So there's no guarantee that they're going to keep the station open 24/7. So that's what it could look like if we divested of our powers and the county were to provide services to Oceano. So what does it really boil down to? The community gets to make the decision. So voters and the selected board are going to make decisions in the future of for fire and emergency services in Oceano. The voters get to speak now, whether they want to fund the additional special tax to remain part of Five Cities Fire Authority. So it comes down to really what mission does the community want to be involved with? Do they want to be part of the Five City Fire Authority mission, which is focused on 10 square miles and has three fire stations, one in Arroyo, one in Grover, and one here in Oceano? Or does it want to be part of the county mission, which encompasses 3,200 square miles, and the closest secondary station would be the Nampoma Mesa or Pismo Beach? So that's really what it boils down to. Is the $180 a year worth staying part of the Five Cities Fire Authority mission? Or do they want to go with the county? So that's what it boils down to. It's an important decision for the community, and that's why the voters get to make that choice. So with that, I'm going to move back to the die. And this would be the time, if you have questions on anything you've seen, whether for Chief Lieberman or myself, you can ask questions. We'll also have time later if you want to make statements, public comment, statements of support or opposition. That would be later. But this is just for questions that we might be able to answer for you. And then if you could come to the mic, and we'll answer them from the dais.
I don't know who I face.
You can face us.
Okay. So I'm looking at the trends and data map. I live right off of Cienega and Elm, and I see the hot spots. I don't see the Oceano Dunes, and I see the ambulances and fire trucks going out there, and I hear them, and a train, I think. I'm interested in what percentage of all the calls go to the Oceano Dunes. I'm not against the dunes, and I love the fire department, but I'm a taxpayer, and $180 out of my pocket would not hurt me. But there are many residents in this community that it's significant. So I have a suggestion. How about a $5 fee or whatever number you could come up with?
Let's just stick with questions now. So I heard a question
I would like to know
how many calls go to the...
Right, and then... would there be other ways, I'll make this a question, other ways to fund this other than the suggested way? I don't want my street lights turned off. Thank you.
So thank you for the question.
Sure.
First of all, I just want to be really clear about where we do and where we don't go. So if you're thinking about those days where you see the four-wheel drive ambulance rushing down Pier Avenue and onto the beach and heading south, into the riding area, Five Cities Fire Authority does not go into that area. We used to, but we stopped because one of the main reasons we stopped was because, on average, those calls were taking us out of the area for 2 hours to get into the dunes and render care. It was creating huge maintenance costs for our patrol, which sits in this station, has now been repurposed to wildland firefighting. And it just wasn't, it didn't seem fair that the taxpayers of the Five Cities Fire Authority were down in the riding area. So that stopped, and CAL FIRE is currently the agency that responds into the riding area. Currently, their rescue is at Station 22, which is on the Mesa, right near the refinery, just to help as a point of reference. I do want to be full disclosure with you in that I did have a map up there, but it would be really hard to see. I have a hard copy if you want to see it later, of the Oceano CSD service area. And the service area, and it's very strange, I didn't realize this about Grover Beach either. The service area extends at some point down to the mean tide line on the beach from Oceano, roughly at about, well, if you take the island streets in the sanitation district and then you start traveling north or west, however you're looking to go towards Pismo Beach, it goes to about the diagonal with Farrell Road and Grover Beach, and then Grover picks it up from that point. So there is a service area where we are the agency having jurisdiction. I'll be honest with you, we don't have the capabilities to be down doing lifeguard duties or driving down the beach on a frequent basis. But what it does mean is we do respond to a very limited number of calls. It was 23 in 2019 to either people that had transported themselves to the Pier Avenue ramp, to the restrooms, the kiosk, whether it was in the state campground area, or we had homeless camp warming fires on the backside of the dunes within this area. So again, about 4% of Oceano's total call volume was in this one area, but we do not go to the riding area. Absolutely not anymore. I will say, and you can cut my mic off at any time, but years ago I was part of an ad hoc committee when Kacho Asajian was the district supervisor for this area, and we were trying to find a way to recover a kiosk fee for the Oceano community to take care of the sand that builds up on Pier Avenue in the Strand area. And we found, unfortunately, that it would take the state legislature to increase any kind of surcharge to the dunes. So my idea was, let's build a kiosk before the kiosk, but unfortunately that didn't happen. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, I would like to ask a follow-up question related to that. I believe you were asking about the Oceano Dunes SVRA, and I've got the state parks map here if anybody wants to look at it. But the Oceano Dunes SVRA stretches from north of Grand Avenue to south of Oso Flaco Lake. So that's the area that we're talking about. And your heat map shows that the Five Cities Fire Authority does respond out there. I made a Freedom of Information Act request to Five Cities Fire Authority, and they sent me a list of 50 incidents that they responded to. And I was asking, in the last year, how many times did you respond to the ODSVRA? They sent me 50 incidents between January and October 2019. So I think there may be some confusion because the frequently asked questions on the OCSD website say that the Five Cities Fire Authority doesn't respond out there, yet you do respond, which puts additional wear and tear on the vehicles when they get salty and sandy. So the second point is related to you saying it's in the sphere of influence. David Church with LAFCO said, "The sphere of influence does not give authority over the area. The sphere of influence is a planning boundary only. It identifies areas for possible future annexation that would allow a jurisdiction to serve that area. The sphere of influence does not give a jurisdiction any regulatory or service powers for that area." So, again, I would like to know under what conditions does Five Cities Fire Authority respond to the Oceano Dunes SVRA, this large area, and how can we be sure that the special tax funds are not going to be used to send our Fire Cities Fire Authority trucks out there?
So thank you for the follow-up question, and this is a conversation, Director, that you and I have had before. If you do look at the LAFCO map that was on the screen, and I have a hard copy here, the service area for the community happens to be the same as the sphere of influence. So a service area boundary is far different than a sphere of influence. In this case, it happens to be the same. An example of this would be, folks, I think you know what city the county government building is in. The county government building is in the city of San Luis Obispo. The city of San Luis Obispo Fire Department has a county facility within its service area, and it's bound to respond to that They don't have the alternative of not responding and waiting for the county fire department to respond to a county incident at that building. We are the agency having jurisdiction. I did not make these boundaries. They were established in 2012. We do not typically take vehicles onto the soft sand. We do it very infrequently. And again, if you look at where the calls are, again, we are not going that way into the riding area. We are staying very close to the Oceano service area and within it, dealing with people that drive themselves off the beach to the kiosk or the restroom, going into the state campground, or working the backside of the dune. So I believe I've, it may be just a philosophical disagreement that we have, and respectfully I say that, in that service area is a community boundary. It's not a sphere of influence.
I think the concern that I've heard from a number of people is that the taxpayers of Oceano are being asked to provide services in the state park, which is CAL FIRE's jurisdiction.
So that's partially accurate when it comes to the Oceano service boundary. So if there's a wildland fire or a fire of any type within the Oceano service district boundary, we respond as does CAL FIRE. And literally, because there's no fence lines in the dunes area, literally it takes us with a battalion chief from CAL FIRE to look at GPS coordinates to determine, is this state resource area, SRA, or is it local resource area, LRA? We handle the LRA, as do other municipalities, and the state is ultimately responsible for SRA. So being that there's no clear boundaries within the shifting sand dunes, just in this one area, again, we are not going anywhere towards the riding area. We will coordinate with our partners at CAL FIRE as to ultimately who owns the incident. I hope that helps.
Okay, do we have any more questions from the public?
Any more questions?
Do you want us to identify who we are, or for the record, or not? Or
who are you?
Okay. My name is Nancy McNeil. No. Okay. Thank you both for your presentation. I really greatly appreciate it. I had all kinds of questions, but I actually have narrowed them down. And so one that keeps popping into my head is that I'm glad you recognize that we really don't have any boundaries when it comes to responding to crises and emergencies. And so strategically, I think the fire stations are okay, you know, but as time's gone on, things have grown, right? So I'd like to know what percentage of the calls out of the Oceano station when it's open, you know, like the other stations, what percentage of the calls are in a different jurisdiction? So, you know, of course, Highway 101 is not in Oceano's jurisdiction, right? But still, I'll see the fire trucks down on the freeway. AG, Rural AG, you know, and Grover and such. So that was a statistical question, you know, for me. And then also, too, is that can you tell us, and I'm only asking you to guess, what percentage of grants are submitted each year to different funders, and what percentage would you say, I'm not looking for absolutes, are actually funded? You know, does that make, am I clear? So if you write 50 grants a year, yeah, we average, you know, 3 to 5, you know, with, you know, a good chance. See what I'm saying? And then my last question would be, if the initiative doesn't pass, right, and we have to move into divorce mode, right, what physical fire equipment gets transferred to Oceano? Is it the broken truck in the back of the lot, or, you know, or is it the hose with the holes in it, you know?
Thank you for the levity. Thankfully, with state requirements for annual hose testing, we should have no hose with holes in it. So let me try to go back to the first question. And let me preface that by saying, in the past, before we went to CAL FIRE dispatch, we were dispatched by where's the fire station in relation to where the call is, which can be efficient, but it's not really efficient. What we have done with by going to CAL FIRE is we now have GPS in all of the fire engines. So when CAL FIRE is processing that incident type, they see what the nearest resource is. Again, going back to the Maytag man, we're not in the fire station as much as people might think. They're out training, they're doing inspections, or they're finishing up on another incident or doing public education. So it's much more fluid and efficient in terms of response. To answer your question, I believe it was, if going back to our stats from 2019, Oceano was roughly about 565 calls within the community of Oceano, because there's a funding formula that divvies up the operating costs of the Five Cities Fire Authority, and calls for service in each one of the member communities is one of the factors that counts when you're using the funding formula. So Oceano, let's just say around 600 calls. I will tell you that almost another 50% of the calls that, so let's just say it's 1,000 calls maybe, that's 40%, Oceano's responding to outside of the Oceano community, because again, that engine with their GPS is in a closer and more advantageous place. I think the statistics that we have used in the past is about 47% of the time this engine is either in Arroyo Grande or Grover Beach. So I hope that answers question number one. Okay, number two, grant success. That one's kind of an elusive question for me to answer. I want to preface it by saying we're very fortunate in that we have a 501c3 nonprofit, the Friends of Five Cities Fire Authority, which helps us fundraise for needed equipment, and also they are in a position to apply for certain grants as a nonprofit that the fire department could not apply to directly. So in the last few years, earlier in my tenure, we were very successful with, you may remember, Fireman's Fund Insurance. That is no more, unfortunately, and that the two white command vehicles, this Ford Explorer out here and then a Dodge pickup truck you may see going around town, those were both funded by grants from Fireman's Fund. I told you about our unsuccessful attempts for SCBAs. That was sad, but I will tell you, prior even to the formation of the Five Cities Fire Authority, the three communities applied for a FEMA grant, and that big ladder truck that you see driving around, truck 5 or 6645, 75% of its cost was funded by the federal government because it was a regional benefit, and the feds really put a lot of weight into that. So the communities had a fund, I believe it was $250,000 of over a $1 million purchase. So that was a big success. Recently, we went to, through the County Recreation Department, we went to apply for State of California Off-Highway Vehicle Funds, and we wanted to put together a special purpose vehicle. You may know what a UTV or a side-by-side type vehicle is. It's not a quad. It's a little bigger, but we applied for about $37,000. We were actually awarded $29,000 to acquire this vehicle to give it firefighting capabilities as well as the ability to transport a patient from a remote area to an ambulance. So I think I'm sorry?
Can we get a ride?
No. Perhaps. That should be, the funding should free up around August of this year, and hopefully by October, November, that vehicle will be here and we'll gladly share it with the communities. That will be on a trailer, so it can be quickly transported to, if you think about those areas on the backsides of the dunes or the James Bay open space in Arroyo Grande, it'll be a great vehicle. So I believe we've had solid success, but not great success, and I think that's a pretty consistent statement throughout the fire service. Your last question, we talked about the fire hose. The fire hose is all good. If the vote fails, what happens? So the original verbiage of the joint powers agreement in 2010 was, if any member chooses to withdraw from the JPA, they will receive the equipment that they contributed at the formation in 2010. And I will tell you, if you went digging through the JPA in the document, in the back someone actually counted desks and folding chairs, and I don't think we have to worry about that, but just to thinking. So if we went strictly by the language of the JPA, the patrol, the white big pickup truck fire engine that's in the bay at Station 3 would go back to Oceano, as would the Wildland engine, which I believe is a 1996, somewhere in there, that would go back. So with that said, there's been amendments to the JPA through these memorandums of agreement that you know have been executed by the three communities, and this ballot measure is a component of the latest memorandum of agreement. Within the memorandum agreements, it says if an agency were to withdraw, basically they wouldn't be held responsible for debt on any equipment that's being financed. So those two newer fire engines, Oceano has a percentage contribution of the lease payments that are 10 years long, and I believe we're getting close to being about halfway through. So that's been negotiated in the MOA. Does that answer your questions?
Very much so. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah. I live in Oceano, too. And the taxes, does it matter how big your parcel is? If you have five parcels or you have a big lot or something like that, or you have a small lot, is it going to be the same?
It's per parcel, regardless of the size.
Okay. Thank you.
More questions?
Hi, my name is Eric Ochoa. I'm a new member to the community. I believe in services. Thank you for your presentation, and to the directors, thank you for being here. My question in regards to if the approval of the special tax goes through, when does that funding go to the fire authority? And my major question for the chief is, what are the priorities that you feel are necessary in this particular community and this particular station that you think is the most important thing that we need to work on first so those funds are allocated in the right way?
So the funds would go on the tax roll for next year, 2021.
Okay.
And so we'd start seeing them collected, you know, later this year.
Okay.
And but that doesn't factor into when we would pay Five Cities Fire Authority. If the measure passes, the funding formula is already in our MOA, and that kicks in for the next fiscal year's budget.
Okay, so they wouldn't even get anything this year then? This fiscal year?
This fiscal year ends in June.
Okay.
So for the fiscal year starting July 1st, they would get their full funding should it pass.
And thank you for the great question. As far as priorities for the Oceano Station, I do want to back up, and I realize it was something I hadn't shared with you during the roadmap portion of the presentation. When the communities came together, the managers and the boards at that time just did whatever it took because it made sense to make it happen. And when I told you everyone contributed their equipment and personnel at the formation of the fire authority, what happened was, at that time, both Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach had two full-time employees, plus there was that reserve firefighter program, right? Oceano only had one full-time captain. And the funding formula actually, Will, you're the finance guy, actually gives Oceano credit for not having as many people, which I think is a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, earlier today and a couple days prior and a few days in 2019, that part-time firefighter was not available to work here, which left just that one full-time employee, which meant that one full-time employee, as well-meaning as they were, could not respond in this community. And so that person had to go and ride with another engine, and we took care of Oceano that way. So to answer your question, my priority is to shore up that problem here in Oceano and get that second full-time employee so the station's not closed.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon Hanneman. I am a property owner, although I have renters now. They have four small children. I cannot imagine not having the fastest response to that family. But I have a question to the manager. Why is there such disparity between parcel being charged, people being served by, like, for instance, the mobile home park, where you said it might be only two parcels, but that was one of the hot spots, and also voters. You know, there's a lot of voters in what might be two parcels, and so why is there this big disparity between who's being charged, who's being served, who's voting?
So that goes down to, so there's many ways you can do a special tax. So there was a lot of discussion before I got here about how to formulate that special tax. You can do it based on land use. When I was with the county, that was similar. We had a little area in Los Osos that was served, so it was based on, you know, a single-family residence pays this much, a church pays this much. It was based on land use, you know. But that had a lot of administrative costs that came along with it. A parcel tax, a flat tax is another way, which is what this is. Another way to do it. So it was the selection that this board made to put on the ballot was a flat tax, the same as was done recently in Templeton. So they had basically the same choice to make in Templeton. So it was discussed by the board, and it was chosen to be a parcel tax.
Okay, so they would be the ones who maybe can answer my question more. Why was the parcel tax chosen as compared to...
There's also a square footage-based tax, which would be a little more equitable, but my colleagues voted for a flat tax, and maybe they can explain their reasoning.
I can answer it. It's kind of a everybody pays deal. There was no clear picture of how you would decide how much the melodrama paid, how much this paid. It would have taken us probably... I don't know that we would have ever been able to file a tax because there would have been, for one thing, there's a protest possibility. And determining who would pay what was, we looked at lists and we looked at other lists and we looked at formulas and we looked at other formulas and went, this is never going
to
work.
So
and
unmanageable
that's why.
To calculate it
it's,
another
yeah,
way.
It's totally, I mean, how do you manage the melodrama? What's its value versus the packing shed across the street versus... apartment complex down the street versus a home. I mean,
okay. Well, that's for a land use base, but square footage base would be pretty straightforward.
Okay, thank you. And then I have one question for Chief Clemens. And that is, I read that originally Arroyo Grande has kind of brought up the issue that they felt they were paying more than their fair share to the Five Cities fire. Yet when I looked at your statistics, it looked like Oceano had 500 and they had more than three times that amount. And they were objecting to paying half. So what, when you calculate the amount that Oceano would be contributing, how does that compare to the full budget of the Five City Fire? And is it an equal proportion compared to the calls that we actually get? And is it possible that in the future... one of the other municipalities could say, again, we don't think you're paying your fair share, or are they going to keep recalculating this every year, or how is that all going to work out between the share and the cost sharing?
Yeah, so I think I can, and the chief can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's the funding formula basically takes a third of the costs and spreads it by population. So the population of the three participants. Then it takes another third of the costs and allocates it by call volume. Then there's another third of the costs that are split equally, one-third each for each station. So that's the current funding formula, but that funding formula can be revisited in the future. I think the MOA calls for it to be revisited every 3 years or so. There is opportunity to change it if it's not working for one of the communities.
It seems very fair to do it in a kind of a multiple faceted decision, like population and volume. That sounds good to me, in the fact that it is a multifaceted decision. It's not just based on number of calls.
Question?
I just want to make sure that I'm hearing the breakdown of this information correctly. So what we are asking for the special tax is broken down to a very small $15 a month. Correct. I'm sorry, I interrupted myself. Versus if it does not pass, We don't pay our $15 a month. However, we could have other things taken away from us, as garbage, lighting being turned off, and other services that are included now should the county take over. No,
yes.
That isn't correct.
So if it does not pass,
that is a potential possibility. So, okay, that seems very reasonable, seeing how $15 all of us could have spent at In-N-Out and or Starbucks maybe this week. And for this month, that is something crucial to our community, like having a fire station. So I wanted to do an overview and a very quick breakdown of what that was, of like yes or no.
You heard it correctly.
Okay. All right.
Any other questions?
Karen's my neighbor. I'll use the microphone. Wait a minute.
So I live next to Karen White. My house catches on fire. This thing has failed. Will the Arroyo Grande Fire Department respond?
Short answer, yes.
Thank you.
Long answer was, I'm not done.
Bill's going to respond.
In the old days, they literally did not. When we were all volunteers, correct. We were so hung up on ego trips that we would sit there and watch. So now we have something called automatic aid agreements that we negotiate with nearby agencies. So just playing this out as a devil's advocate, if Oceana was no longer part of the Five Cities Fire Authority, we're going to negotiate agreements much like we have with CAL FIRE today, that on working structure fires, we go help each other because none of us are big enough to do it on our own. So yes, we would be there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So for my $180, I might not get much because AG's coming anyway.
If they're available.
Well, then Grover would be available. And it's five cities, and I only got three cities. Oh, don't shake your head at me. We've had this conversation.
So, and I would add to that, though, if it fails and CAL FIRE were to be out of this station, there's much greater possibility that the fire engine here will be serving somewhere in Napomo or Pismo or some other part of the county where that engine is needed, as opposed to if it's part of the Five Cities Fire Authority, it would be somewhere within the Five Cities Fire Authority boundary. So that just gives you a little bit of flavor to what is not a black and white question.
Here's another question. Where's the justice in this? In my neighborhood, there are 70 parcels. 30 of them have homes on them.
57. It got changed.
57 what?
Parcels.
57, okay. So let's say 60 parcels, and half of them are unoccupied. They're empty lots. And yet, in a mobile home park, it's two parcels, and you may have 200 people, residences, living there. Is there any justice in divvying things up that way, is the question.
As I mentioned, there's many ways that you can craft a special tax. The one that's been selected is on the ballot. Whether one is better than another, I think they all have their shortfalls. And I'll just leave it at that.
To tag on to the last gentleman's question about if there is a fire and the measure fails, what is the response time for Arroyo Grande to go to that house in Oceano?
Yeah, so great question with a lot of assumptions. So just some of them.
Generally.
So is it sitting in the station? I don't know off the top of my head. I would be guessing what drive time is from that station. Mm-hmm. But as a comparison, mm-hmm. that may indirectly answer your question, this station can get to Elm Street Park faster than the Arroyo Grande station. So if you're looking at as the crow flies, it's not a very long distance from the Arroyo Grande station, but it's kind of a circuitous path. I would think that Station 3 would likely beat Arroyo Grande into Halcyon.
Okay, so
I have people that actually do this. Am I right? I see Captain Leathers, who works at the station. Brian, drive time to Halcyon town site. Would we beat Station 1 with this station? Yes.
Okay, so I'm guesstimating from Arroyo Grande to this facility here would be approximately 7 minutes?
Or longer. Grover okay. Beach is a much faster drive.
So would, in that case, if it was a fire, you're going to lose more of the house. If it was going to be a medical, a heart attack, it would be fatal. In using generalities, not specifics. And this is kind of an open question. And more for, and also understanding that the fire insurances would go up if there is no fire station here. So you would be paying more than $15 on fire insurance increase because there is no fire station here.
So great open-ended question. I'd like to agree with the vast majority, actually all of it, but I just want to tag on to the fire insurance. The insurance companies use a third party named by the name of the Insurance Service Office, and they gather all kinds of risk metrics that the insurance companies, the people that are really smart, figure out to apply rates. We were so fortunate to improve it's called the ISO rating, mm-hmm. based on a joint dispatch center, based on having multiple stations responding to the same incident, in this case a structure fire, and by working with, I know Tony's here somewhere, working with our public works partners and making sure that our water distribution system had the needed improvements. So we've actually been able to decrease risk, which has a favorable rating on fire insurance premiums to the communities, by working together.
Right. Okay. So if there is no fire station here, and because the measure fails, then there's potentially increased costs to the customers here in the district through other methods.
And I just want to caution, if it fails and we divest of the powers, then the county would decide whether it wants to provide service to Oceano, and I would assume that they would serve it out of this. So I don't want you to get the wrong impression that there's not going to be a fire station if it fails. There could be a fire station. It's just what mission do they have? Are they serving the five cities, 10 square miles, or are they serving the county, where they could be called?
And knowing Cal Fire, it'll be this greater need of the county versus this district.
I want to tag on to Will's comment. I consider Scott Jalbert, the Cal Fire unit chief, a professional and personal friend, and I think they're a great organization, and I don't think we can really see what the crystal ball holds as far as scenarios if Oceano were to leave the Five Cities Fire Authority. So I think every option's on the table, and I just want to make sure that I've stated that.
Could I ask a quick question?
Sure.
If the Five Cities Fire Authority failed, would there be an automatic aid with Arroyo Grande and or Grover Beach for medical? Not just, I mean, automatically everybody goes to a fire.
So you're learning more about the fire service than you ever wanted to this afternoon. So there's several kind of agreements. There's mutual aid, which is the statewide mutual aid system. That's why you see fire engines from all over the state of California going into someone's community to help them for those large incidents, whether it's a mud flow or a fire or earthquake, in the case of San Simeon and Paso Robles. There's also local agreements called the Automatic Aid Agreement, and I've shared that with you earlier. The Automatic Aid Agreement is basically two fire departments sitting down saying, what can we do to help each other short of subsidizing one another? So what that means is, for those large-scale incidents, fires, yeah, we need to help each other. For maybe multi-vehicle accidents on Highway 101, we need to help each other. For hazardous materials incidents, we need to help each other. For medical calls, those are not in the automatic aid agreement. That would become a mutual aid request. And the big difference is, And this happens to us a lot on Valley Road or the Los Barros area, which is county fire. They'll request a mutual aid response from us for a medical call in that area. And we want to take care of everyone that's in distress. But the difference between automatic aid and mutual aid is we will go to mutual aid if we are able, if we are available and we have an available unit. We don't have that obligation that comes with an automatic aid agreement.
Any other questions?
If this does not pass, what's plan B, other than turning off our lights and being filled with garbage in our neighborhoods? Is there a plan B?
That is what the board has decided, to divest of the services. And what that entails is the county coming up with a plan for service for Oceano and figuring out how they will fund it. But both the county and Oceano has to agree to that plan of services. So if it's too draconian, we can say, no, we don't want you, county, to provide the services. We'll stand up our own fire department with our limited resources as best we can, which would probably not be the ultimate or optimal service that the community needs with our limited funding.
Linda, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
You know,
I've been here too long. You know, my neighbor's house burned to the ground, and you were the chief at that time. And what my fear is that Oceano is piecemealed by mutual aid agreements. So when that house went up, right, the five cities, they had that truck there, you know, as quickly as they could, you know, and the other fire company, and I have no opposition to CAL FIRE, they're fine. You know, we're on Highway 1, they could see the smoke, but they didn't know where they were going, right? Which was delaying the fire truck from doing anything. So, because you know you have to have two people on, if one, two have to go in, two have to be outside. So all they could do was run around and hook up hoses. Well, this family's home burnt to the ground, and it was really traumatic. And what I see is it wasn't the fault of individuals or organizations, but that the mutual aid agreement had been piecemealed together and delayed a response at every corner. You know, I was attacked at my house last week by this woman who was under the influence of drugs, and she was literally stuck to my screen 4 points, right? You know, trying to break into my house with me right there, and I called the police, you know, like, get over here, right? And you know, they never came, and it, you know, so I think, oh my gosh, we can't piecemeal mutual aid. You know, I do think though that I agree with Ms. Rapogal on exploring other ways of breaking up the cost at another time. But we're in the 11th hour now. This has been going on for 5 years. So I do think that we should explore different costs. We did it with the water and the parks, and I think that a more equitable system, you know, could be considered. But I don't want to get stuck in a mutual aid.
So I think, President Austin, if you want to open it to public comment on this item, then...
Sure. I just want to ask something really quick.
If there's no more questions. You have a question?
Yes. I just wanted to comment or a question on if the county divest and the county takes over and they contract with CAL FIRE. So we know the CAL FIRE station on the Mesa goes to the beach. So if this was a county station, then would the CAL FIRE engines come here, and this would this be the response station that goes to the dunes?
Absolutely. I mean, if CAL FIRE is the service provider and they need to go to the riding area, the
they'll be leaving Oceano to go to the dunes?
If this station was available, that's where they would respond from.
Okay.
Can you explain the second call?
Sorry, could you repeat
the
that?
The second call. If CAL FIRE is out on the dunes, then where, if there's a call in Oceano?
Okay. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief. I do want to preface that I don't know what the response model would look like. So theoretically, if we were discussing that, CAL FIRE does it today. They would move up an available engine from hopefully a nearby station if it was available, or elsewhere in the county. It's called a move up and cover, and we're actually discussing that countywide. If we're committed to a structure fire in Oceano, all of us, plus the available CAL FIRE units that are on automatic aid, we can also request an engine to cover for that next call that could happen while we're all busy on the fire.
Thank you. Okay, so anybody want to do some public comment?
Okay, I'm sorry, but there's a vigil for Larry Bross at 5 o'clock, so I'm going to have to excuse myself.
Right. Not that we didn't know him.
Hello, my name is Troy Smith. I'm a retired fireman. I did my time in Kern County. I have 31 years of experience with Kern County. We bought over here in 2001, and we've been part-timers up until 2013. I didn't know our fire service locally was in such terrible shape until I got involved in this program to try to get A20 passed. I will say that I really appreciated both your presentations and the questions from the audience. In Kern County, we referred to mutual aid. We had a mutual aid agreement with all of the major cities that we didn't provide fire protection for, including Bakersfield City, as well as Arvin and Delano. Eventually, those cities became under our wing. All I can say is, folks, we've got to get this thing passed. We need it for our fire protection and, most importantly, the medical aid. As was pointed out, we do 60%, almost 70% medical aid service, and we seniors are more apt to have a medical aid need than we would a fire. And so I'm behind you 100%. I've made some cash donations. I've done some walking, and I'll continue to do so. But this is really, really important to get this community up to speed. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know, just to tag along from, I heard some other questions about a plan B, but we can pass this special tax, we have control over. And a plan B, we don't necessarily, as voters, have control over. That's correct, right? Like, we don't get to decide our plan B. That would be the county stepping in, deciding what to do with our services. Is that right?
It could be the county, but it's really this board, because the board has the ultimate authority whether it gives up the service.
Okay.
In the end.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to speak?
Yes, my name is Gary Tucker, and I've been a resident here in Oceano for about 20 years. I definitely agree that we need to keep our fire department operating as much as they can. But I was wondering, has the board considered other means of taxation, like it was mentioned a cannabis tax or tourism tax? We have a lot of tourism here in our community. And those are just things that I was thinking, so it wouldn't be so much of a burden on the Oceano residents, because I'm on a fixed income. My wife and I were retired, and I know a lot of people are, but and I'm not saying I'm against the tax, but are there any other ways that the board has considered to raise money for this?
So that's what I try to present in my presentation is, unlike cities, community service districts don't have the ability to have any of those taxes. We don't have that authority. So property tax is it.
Through the county. We definitely would love to do that.
And I could add that we have searched, we have looked, we have asked Beaches and Parks. We didn't start by deciding we needed a tax plan. I didn't decide I wanted to charge myself $180 a year more, and I'm on a fixed income also. But there just isn't any other place. That's it. That's all we got.
I'd just like to say thank you very much for the board to coming up with this. I think it's a very fair way to look at the entire area. Our area is not very large, and I know it's not an easy decision. I am going to vote yes on this measure just because I believe in it, and I think it's going to be probably the best course of action for our community to grow, because I think with adding maybe an additional support person and having more resources for this community, it's only getting better. Among other things, I recently purchased here, and I see that the housing market is going up. So if the housing market's going up, we're going to need the available services to sustain this community and make this community grow. So thank you very much for the board, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Brenda Lowe. I'm resident of Oceano, and I'm a resident that lives in one of the mobile home parks. And I just want to say that as part of services that we provide for one another, kind of comes down to taxes, but some of us who, our kids are grown and our grandkids are almost grown, we still pay part of the school taxes, and we still pay, you know, something toward roads in some degree of taxes, and sometimes it's for the greater good. And when we are kind of a disadvantaged community financially, and I think we're a disadvantaged community in terms of income levels and that kind of thing, it just really helps that the approach you're taking, even though I don't want to spend a whole lot more, but I am willing to spend more, because I think it's more equitable for people of lesser incomes, in that there are going to be some that it hits at the full 180, and I wish that weren't the case. But I do feel fortunate to live in a type of housing, whether it's apartment or mobile home in our case, where we do kind of share the financial burden, and we still do pay property taxes that's passed on in rents or lease or that. There's other property taxes besides just this 180. So I do support it. I will just leave it at that. I do support voting yes on Measure A.
Thank you.
A20 specifically.
Okay. We got one.
Last quick question. If this fails, is there at some point in the future that we could get back into the fire authority, or is this a one-and-done business?
I don't know.
Currently, in the MOA, it requires that the Oceano CSD desist as its membership June 30th, 2021. Not to say in the distant future we couldn't get back in, but as the contract goes now, we're out.
Now it's your turn.
Hurry. My name is Slade. I live here in Oceano, too. And, my question is like, when the fire department does come out, is there a fee for that? Or is it, like, if this does pass, is there going to be that on top of it? Or is it just going to be, basically, this is financing everything?
Yeah, there is no fee for service.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Mary Wagoner. I'm new here. I've only been here 10 years. I love it here.
Can you use the microphone, please?
Sorry. Anyway, I was walking my street this morning, telling people what was going on, and this one gentleman says, "See my house? I'm sitting on three lots. His house is on three lots, so he doesn't have to pay $180. He doesn't have to pay $300 and whatever three times $180 is. And when I heard that, I was heartbroken that this gentleman, who's retired and on a fixed income, is having to pay whatever three times 180 is.
But is it one parcel? Or?
No, it's three parcels.
He actually has three parcel numbers?
He has three parcels, and I couldn't believe it. And then we, of course, reiterated it today. So, but, yes, this gentleman is sitting on three parcels. He's on that end of Oceano.
Oh, okay.
So.
Sometimes they're all... Yeah. Well, one number when it's like yeah.
I together. Believe, and I've been told that in some situations where parcels are, and this is true also for the village of Halcyon, where parcels are confused and down one side and up the other side and have different numbers for little squares and stuff, there are ways you can go to the county and get those parcels put into one parcel. But the challenge with that is then you cannot split them later if you want to sell two of those three parcels.
His whole house sits on three parcels.
He might, but there would be a good possibility that he could get that rectified at the county level.
I will share that with him. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else have public comment? Okay, are you going to, seeing none, then I think we will, do you have any other comment?
You might want to make a motion to receive and file.
Okay, or is there any, do you have any comments? Any comments?
My only comments would be to thank everybody for their interest.
Really, thank
I'm
you
I'm really pleased
being
that
here.
The people that came here and.
I hope you were, and if
yeah.
One thing, after we adjourn here, the fire department is opening the fire station if anyone's interested in a tour.
Okay, so, great.
Right.
So if you'd like to tour the station, you feel welcome. Thank you so much, everyone.
Whoa.
Are we going to discuss the measure?
Well, come on. If you have some comment. Sure, yeah.
We weren't discussing the measure. I have a copy of the ballot here, a sample ballot that contains the measure, and it does state that... fiscal year 2021 will be assessed 2% per parcel or $180 per parcel annually. The question I have is that it also states that beginning in fiscal year 2021 to 2022, thereafter, the maximum amount the special tax shall increase is 2%. Does that mean it's going to be 2% above in 2022 than it was in 2021?
Yes. So the 180 would increase 2% the next year, and then 2%.
So there'll be an increase every year.
It's capped, maximum 2%.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that it's part of Proposition 13.
So it's going to be 2% of $180?
Yes, so that is decided by the board each year. So
as I understand it, the $180 that is assessed on annually in 2021, in 2021-22, it will be 2% against $180.
Yes, if the board chooses to.
But it's not going to be 2% in addition to the original assessment. Otherwise, it's not going to be 4%.
No.
Okay. Then I have another question.
Sure.
The taxes levied may vary due to factors including, but not limited to, variations of the number of taxable parcels within the district and inflation. What index are you using for the inflation?
So say that again now.
I hate these ballot things. They're so ambiguous sometimes. Okay, the actual amount of money raised in each year, the taxes levied may vary due to factors including, but not limited to, variations in the number of taxable parcels within the district and inflation. Who determines the inflation? What's your index?
I would have to look into that.
Whatever.
I don't understand it either.
But the maximum is 2%. So what that's trying to say is that the amount of tax revenue that comes into us is going to vary based on how many parcels are out there.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, if inflation is not there, the board may choose not to assess that full 2%. So I'd have to look at the language specifically, okay. But it's never going to be more than 2%.
Okay.
And it may not, you're saying there's, and it.
Got your word on that,
huh? It could
huh?
go up, but it could not go up.
Well,
right.
That's in the ballot. It's never going to be more than 2%.
That's the law.
Your things are terrible.
The 2% is the inflationary index of Prop 13, and it can never, the government in California, I think all California, can never raise property taxes more than 2% a year.
Good old Jarvis.
Yeah, it was good old Jarvis, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm done.
Okay, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I want to just say here at the end that with the failure, we're going to lose local control, possibly. But in addition to that, we're going to lose our ownership of our buildings that the Oceana community has already paid for over the years. So it's kind of like losing your identity. So I hope everyone keeps that in mind that... you know, we are a community, and we're trying to preserve that.
Very good. Thank you, Shirley. Is there anything else anyone want to comment?
We have to take action.
So we, what was our action to be?
Receive and file.
Can I get a motion to receive and file?
I shall move.
Yes. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we will receive and file, and if there's no other comments...
I make a motion, we adjourn.
We will adjourn, and thank you again for all coming. Feel free to come by and ask questions.